Blog Talk Radio.
You find out life's this game of inches. So is football. Because in either game, life or football, the margin for error is so small. I mean, one half a step too late or too early, and you don't quite make it. One half second too slow, too fast, you don't quite catch it. The inches we need are everywhere around us.
Hell yeah.
They're in every break of the game. Every minute, every second. On this team, we fight for that inch. On this team, we tear ourselves and everyone else around us to pieces for that inch.
Good Tuesday evening to you all, and thank you again for joining us here on another edition of the Red Zone Blitz, coming to you right here on the Frat House Sports Radio Network. Frat House Mike here with you. And boy, oh boy, we've got some games to talk about as we just came through a tremendous, tremendous week 13 in the NFL. They couldn't have set it up any nicer for us. They started it right out off this top on Thanksgiving Day with three great matchups there, and it just went throughout the entire weekend. Well, I guess maybe until you got to Monday night. I guess by Monday night, they just figured that, you know, they had given us the best of the best. You know, why should we be complaining about Monday night, right, Brandon? I think I got Brandon with us. Brandon, Monday night was the Jets and the Dolphins, and I guess the NFL's thinking was, don't be complaining to us. We gave you some great stuff. So what if Monday sucked?
Yeah, right. Hey, I'm with you. The rest of the slate of games all the way through Sunday night was pretty awesome, and then that stinker on Monday night. But hey, yeah. You're gonna get it. If anybody should be mad, it should be ESPN.
Yeah,
they get
well,
stuck with that game while all these other good games happening. But
except
that's all right.
That there were a lot of, I'm sure, like ourselves, there were a lot of fantasy leagues that were kind of finishing up things yesterday for at least the regular season. I know a lot of fantasy league regular seasons close out on week 13, as ours does.
Well, I think the bigger leagues do. Most of the smaller leagues go one more week, and this past week and this coming week, definitely they're either in the playoffs or rare, you know, finishing it up.
But
so,
the mere fact that that was the last game for the weekend, that Jets Dolphins game, that's really what kept me hanging in there, was the fact that I wanted to see how things were going to end up with the final few playoff spots in our fantasy league. And I'm sure that's, if nothing else, that drew a lot of people to ESPN. Are you in a league, and how did you do this year? Let us know. We'd like to hear about it. 347-826-9964. That's how you can get in with us. We're going to be talking a whole load of, and you know, I'm going to tell you right now, there were so many darn good games this past weekend. We're probably not going to have time to get to all of them, so we're going to miss a few. But if you want to jump in there and throw yours in real quick as a consideration, please, by all means, 347-826-9964 is how you can get a hold of us via the phone. If you are listening on the computer, just simply hit the Skype button, the little blue Skype button. If you're Skype capable, that'll put you through to us loud and clear. We'll see you come up in the switchboard here, and I'll be able to get you on the air. As always, we have the chat room going over on our channel in BTR, so you can get to us that way and leave a comment there. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it, Brandon, but I thought we would start off with one of the games from last Thursday, and as we pointed out, and we talked about it a little bit too as well, because we had our regular Frat House Sports Show on Friday, So a couple of those, you know, those three games had already been played, and we kind of referenced them a little bit on Friday. And I don't want to get into a lot of in-depth on this one because I know Jim Williams and I are probably going to break down the Philadelphia Eagles and Dallas Cowboys game tomorrow night on our Inside the War Nest program. But it was a pretty spectacular game for the Philadelphia Eagles, and I think it would have to be, you know, over at Inside the War Nest, I've kind of had a running give and take back and forth with Jim over there. He's been wanting to cite a couple of games that have been played prior by the Eagles as being statement games. I'm saying, no, we haven't had a statement game yet. I don't know. This seemed to me this was a statement game. 33-10, the Eagles took care of the Cowboys down in Dallas on Thanksgiving Day. Dallas wearing their hated blue jerseys, which kind of surprised me. And my goodness, the Eagles, 256 yards on the ground versus 217 in the air. There's a reversal. McCoy had 159 yards. He now, I think, is third in the league. He has snuck up to third in the league in the rushing department. Nice job by Sanchez. No turnovers. At least there weren't any mistakes. No interceptions, no turnovers. The Eagles looked pretty dominant against a team that I think a lot of people kind of thought, okay, we'll take this one as a loss. Dallas is going to win this one. Yes?
Oh, yeah. I agree with you one wholeheartedly. I mean, the biggest stat, as you just went through the rundown there, that I'm looking at that sticks out to me is the Eagles' rushing yardage. They actually have more than passing. I don't think we've seen that all year. And it's about time. I mean, it's good. I think it's good that they actually have a balanced game, you know, balanced offensive attack. And it led to them winning a game that few thought they would have. I mean, I think I know, I don't know if I actually gave a pick, but I severely hinted that I thought Dallas would win this one because it's in Dallas, it's on Thanksgiving, they always play well on Thanksgiving, and Tony Romo is incredible in November.
Mm-hmm.
We're still in November for this game. You know, it was, anyway. So I'm expecting, you know, a Cowboys, you know, not lopsided, but at least, you know, them winning the game relatively easily. And then, you know, have a rematch in a couple of weeks in Philadelphia where I'd kind of expect the opposite outcome. Well, now we got an Eagles blowout in Dallas on Thanksgiving with an offense that looks, you know, much more balanced than it has in the last few weeks.
Mm-hmm.
If this is a sign of things to come, it looks good for the Eagles. You know, they're spreading the ball out on, you know, rushing and passing. I mean, they had, you know, more people seem to be involved. Jordan Matthews seemingly has taken over as the number two receiver. And Macklin had another nice game. I think Zach Ertz, the tight end, has been kind of missing lately. But Brent Celek's kind of sort of came back in the last few games. So, you know, I think the Eagles are in pretty good shape here. I don't know, you know, you're hearing rumblings about Nick Foles and stuff, but Sanchez seems to be doing at least enough to win at times. No mistakes this week, which is good. That's the one thing that always bothered me a little bit about Foles Sanchez is he's prone for that interception or the fumbles, et cetera, et cetera. So I don't know if he's keeping himself under control more, or if it's just the Eagles, you know, the ball's out of his hands fast enough that he can't make a stupid mistake. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it looks good for them. You know, they're clearly in the top 2-3 teams in the NFC. I think we're going to talk about a couple of them, others, but before we're done here. So, you know, they're clearly making their statement as far as where they are in the pecking order of the NFC anyway. I think pretty much stake their claim to the East. I mean, it's theirs to lose now with Dallas coming to Philadelphia next week. You know, if the Eagles, you know, win that game as well, I think that pretty much cements them winning that division.
Well, you're kind of, yeah, and you just kind of answered the question I was going to throw at you. I think you answered it. I was going to say to you, you know, does a win like that against Dallas, does that clearly make Philadelphia the number two team in the NFC? And I think you just answered it. You said, well, top two or three.
Right.
Probably you're throwing in there, I would suspect you're throwing in there, the Seattle Seahawks, who I want to go to next. The Seattle Seahawks on Sunday beat the 49ers. Important.
It was Thursday night. Thursday night.
That's right, Thursday.
Yeah, that was the wrap-up game. Yeah.
That was the second game, correct. That's right.
Right.
The Seattle Seahawks, 19-3, they beat the 49ers. The 49ers never really appeared to even show up for the game. In fact, so much so that 49ers president after the game tweeted out an apology to the fans for the performance of the team. Much to the chagrin, I would imagine, of the coaching staff and the team. When you look at this game from Thursday night, Brandon, while the scoreboard would appear to be somewhat lopsided, I don't know if necessarily you could say the same for the game plan when you break it all down. There was only one touchdown by Russell Wilson, and that was late into the first quarter. After that, everything was scored on the foot of Steven Hauschka. It was all field goals. So really, when it comes right down to it, there really wasn't a dominating offensive performance by either side of the ball here. Now, that doesn't take away from the fact that it being low scoring, obviously you had two pretty good defenses coming into play here. Your thoughts on this one? I mean, are you coming away with kind of the same feeling that I did?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you just nailed it. It was pretty much a defensive battle, except for the fact that the 49ers offense looked really bad on top of the Seattle Seahawks defense, playing well. I mean, look at their numbers. It doesn't even appear to me they have 200 yards of offense. I mean, in today's NFL, that's like horrendous. Mm-hmm. You can't play, you're not going to win a game not even getting 200 yards combined on the ground and passing. The Seattle, like you had pointed out, it wasn't very dominant on either side offensively. I think Seattle's defense has been flexing their muscles the last few weeks. They're definitely playing better. Richard Sherman is clearly hitting the peak of his year. I mean, he's intercepting balls. He's, shushing the crowd, et cetera, but he's backing up, his bravado with his play on the field. They're playing pretty good football on that side of the ball. And, yes, they are one of the other two or three teams I was referring to. I mean, the Seahawks are peaking at the right time. And, unfortunately, for the division-leading Cardinals, they're right behind. They're kind of fizzling at the wrong time. I was a little shocked on Sunday night. Rodney Harrison, who's been a, advocate all year of the Arizona Cardinals, a couple weeks ago said they were a lock. Now he says it doesn't even look if they're going to make the playoffs. And I kind of find that to be shocking. I think Arizona still makes the playoffs. I don't think they're going to lose enough games to get out of it, because one of the other teams we thought they would be here would be the Seattle's opponents in this game, the 49ers. I think you can essentially stick a fork in them. I think they're done. I think something's going to happen with Jim Harbaugh, whether it's, he's fired or traded. I mean, I keep hearing this.
Yep.
They want draft picks for Harbaugh, but now they're saying if Harbaugh is smart, he'll dig his heels in and refuse to do it, because apparently he has to be a willing participant in the trade, because he doesn't, the thought is he shouldn't, want the team he's going to give up draft picks that he could use. So I don't know. It's going to be interesting to watch this one unfold. I have a feeling it's going to end up, being a 49ers firing essentially of Harbaugh, and then Harbaugh will be coaching somewhere else next year.
Got to be something combustible just simmering underneath of everything that we know coming from the 49ers. I mean, team is 7-5. The team is 7-5. This is not a horrible situation, and it certainly is not one that you would necessarily throw the towel in on at this point. No. San Francisco, very, very plausible that this team could make the playoffs still at this moment. And yet, as you point out, almost from last Thursday on, we have heard nothing but negativity coming out of everything about the 49ers.
Yes, you're correct. And I think you can pretty much count the 49ers as out. They have to play Seattle again. They're not going to win that game. So, you take that out of the equation. I mean, because they got to go to Seattle and beat Seattle in their home stadium. It's not going to happen. I'm sorry. Not the disarray this team's in. That right there you know, can eliminate the 49ers in my book, because they're not going to have any tiebreakers against anybody that's going to matter. And even if they do end up 10-6 by some miracle, which means they only lose one more game, you know, I just don't see them. They're not going to make it, and if they do, they're not even going to win a game. They're in total disarray, and you know, we're going to have to just see how it all plays out. It's a shame because, you know, like you just said, it looks like a team that should be good, and you know, they're only 2 years removed from the Super Bowl.
Right.
They were in the NFC Championship game last year, lost to the eventual, you know, Super Bowl champion Seahawks. You know, what can you? Why would there be disharmony? Why can't this GM and coach or whoever doesn't get along? It seems like a GM coach issue. Why can't they figure this out, that this is a good working deal? The team's been solid for 3-4 years now, but they just can't seem to, you know, coexist.
Yep.
So you're going to see Harbaugh, you know, who knows where Harbaugh could go. He could end up going back to college ranks with your Minnesota or Michigan Wolverines. I think more likely destination, everything I've been hearing, is the Raiders.
Raiders is right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because apparently, if all things are true, there is a deal in place for him to go coach Cleveland this year. They were going to give up 2 third-round picks, and he kiboshed it, mainly because his wife likes the Bay Area. Well, then staying in the Bay Area to coach in Oakland is a logical step to me. You know, I think if that's the case, if he clearly had an out, and he could have gone to a team that actually is showing promise, you know, in Cleveland.
With Cleveland,
With a lot of good young players, and they had high draft picks. I mean, this was before they even drafted Manziel. This would have happened all before any of that. You know, that's a prime situation, you would think, for a coach, and he chose not to go. So, I don't know. It's a very perplexing situation.
One of the things you hear about Harbaugh over there at San Francisco is – And this is at least early on one of the things that we heard frequently, was that his temperament just was a little over the top. It was too much for the team, and in fact, it may be too much for professional athletics for the NFL. God knows you got to treat these guys with kid gloves. This isn't like a collegiate program where I guess maybe you can be a little bit tougher. I think that's one of the reasons. So many have thought that perhaps maybe the collegiate ranks would be the better move for Harbaugh. I'm just thinking, you know, it could be just as mercurial going over to a right now, one win team in Oakland. Can you imagine going over to Oakland with all of the messes that they're dealing with? They've got problems with their stadium, which absolutely is one of the worst dumps in the entire country, and problems inside the team. I mean, I don't know. Taking the kind of temperament that you've got from Harbaugh and putting it into that kind of an environment, it seems to me you've got the ingredients for exactly the same thing, if not worse, than what you've got right now in 49ers.
Well, maybe not. I mean, it's a good – look at it from this point of view. They have nowhere to go but up. I mean, I don't think it can get much worse than a 1-9, 1-10 right now.
Yeah, 1-11.
Yeah, 1-11. It ain't going to get much better. I mean, much worse, rather. So he can only go up. So he'll be viewed as, you know, doing a good job. And he's done a good job in the NFL. I don't know if I buy the temperament thing. We heard the same thing in San Francisco before when Mike Singletary was the coach, that he was too high-strung, too this, too that to be in the NFL. You know, and he's still a good coach. He's been a D coordinator since, and he's doing a good job, you know, elsewhere. I don't know if I buy that. I think there's disharmony in that organization somewhere, and they're trying to – I don't know what they're trying to accomplish. They're trying to paint Harbaugh as the guy in the wrong, I guess. But at the same time, they want to get trade value for him, so it doesn't make any sense to me. You know, I agree with your original point that it should be – you know, they should find a way to make this work because it's been working, you know, from on-field results anyway.
Yep.
You would think they should be able to make it work.
Yeah, a comment from our chat room. Kaepernick seems to get a pass while other clubs are zeroing in on their QB woes. I guess referencing really Washington more than any other team. How much of the 49ers' troubles belong on the QB in Santa Clara? I don't know. I Kaepernick, I think, does get a pass because Kaepernick at least appears to be doing all of the things that he was doing before. You understand? I mean, that's the way I view it. With the situation with RG3, that just seems to – you. It's obvious that he's not the same quarterback that he was two seasons ago, that he's not doing something or that something is just not right. But with Kaepernick, I really haven't seen necessarily a diminution in his play or in his in what he's doing. I mean, you can weigh on that one as well, Brandon.
Well, it does appear to be that he's getting a pass. He's not getting the criticism. Most NFL starting quarterbacks bear, you know, a certain level, no matter what, be it good or bad, of criticism or undue praise sometimes. That's just unfortunately in nature. I understand the team's winning, but the team's not looking good winning. And I could understand how Kaepernick – I am a little surprised you don't hear more about his stats. Numbers this year have not been good, not offensively. Granted, nobody on the offense has. I mean, Frank Gore's been invisible, you know, most of the year, and Vernon Davis has been, like, the invisible man. He's not catching anything. He's not doing anything. So maybe that, you know, add all that into, you know, Kaepernick's issues, woes. I don't know. Maybe that's why, you know, he gets a bit of a pass in the media, but I don't know. I think he is getting a bit of a pass somehow.
Interesting.
I mean,
interesting.
You don't hear any negativity about him yet. You know, RG3 is, you know, the first thing out of everybody's mouth when you talk about Washington.
Yep.
I don't know. You would think, you know, maybe the point Uncle Mark's trying to get at is he should be a stronger leader being the, you know, starting quarterback, and it would maybe make some of this other harmony kind of thing go away. He doesn't seem to me to be a strong on-field leader. So, you know, from that point of view, I think Kaepernick should get some criticism. I mean, at least to me, he doesn't – you know how some quarterbacks, you know they're in charge when they're starting? I mean, like, you got Aaron Rodgers and Brady and Manning, especially Peyton Manning. You know they're in charge. They're the leader. Do you ever get that feeling so much from Kaepernick? I mean, you do from Russell Wilson even, and he's kind of a quieter leader, but yet you don't get it from Kaepernick. I don't anyway. Maybe it's just me, but –
No, I agree with you. You're right about that.
I've kind of soured on – I kind of thought Kaepernick was going to be, better than he is.
If there were going to be a leader in that room on the offensive side of the ball, I guess you would have to go to one like Vernon Davis over anybody else.
Or
I guess
Bolden.
Simply just
– I think Anquan Bolden probably is the most veteran, been through the most, been to the Super Bowl. You know, a couple times. I think he was there a couple times. He was there with the Raiders, and I think he was there with the 49ers when they lost. So, you know, he's been around. But, yeah, that team's lacking something. I don't know what it is. And, you know, maybe a new coach, you know, because it's going to happen. Something's going to give.
It looks that way. Yep. It looks like it's a fait accompli. We kind of spun out of control there and got talking about San Francisco 49ers off of talking about the Seattle Seahawks. Just bringing it back for a moment to Seattle, just 1 second, because then I want to move on.
Sure.
We were just talking about that defense for the Seattle Seahawks. Interesting situation. In doing some research for tomorrow night's Inside the War Nest, because, of course, the Eagles will be playing Seattle on Sunday this coming week. And Jim and I, of course, will be getting in depth tomorrow night, 7 p.m., Inside the War Nest right here for you Philadelphia Eagles fans and you NFC East fans. That's a program you want to be listening to. We're going to get into that, speculating on this upcoming game that the Eagles will be playing against Seattle at home. Interestingly, just a few short weeks ago, Brandon, you and I were even sitting right here on this program going, well, the Seahawks kind of look like they're floundering a bit. They don't seem to be flying straight. And now all of a sudden, it just seems to be gelling together. Right now, Seattle's defense, again, now all of a sudden ranked number one overall in the league. Number three against the pass, number five against the rush. So it really seems that, you know, we talk about football, we talk about games, how they're played in regular season, how you need to be playing them come the playoffs. You hear the old line, defense wins games in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
Looks like the defense has really kind of gelled this team together, as you say, kind of at the right time, all kind of just shaping up at the right time near the end of the season.
Well, here's an interesting little note for you for tomorrow. The Eagles have played all three of the other NFC West teams already. The only team they beat were the Rams. They've lost to the Cardinals and the 49ers. They're two of the three Eagles' losses. And now they're coming up against the Seattle team at a point when they're the hottest. And I, when I say them, I mean Seattle. I think Seattle's going to win the game this week. And then the Philadelphia Eagles will sweep the NFC East on the way to the playoffs. That's the way I see them going. They have three more games after Seattle, all against the NFC East. They got Dallas, Washington, New York. They're going to be cruising by the New York game. They're going to lose this week, I think, to Seattle. I think the best game you could put together on paper would be Seattle-Green Bay on the NFC side for the NFC title game. I think the Eagles need to find another gear if they hope to be in that, you know, equation come the end, which they could. Don't get me wrong. I don't think they're out of it. I think the Eagles, they need Foles back. I don't think Sanchez is the guy. That's just me. I think it's a severe step down. But, you know, you're going to say I'm biased because he was a Jet. But that's just my opinion. I think the Eagles are better off with Foles under Helm.
All right, let's go take a look at a game that we had highlighted here front and center on Sunday, and that was the San Diego Chargers and the Baltimore Ravens. And San Diego surprisingly won this game by a mere 1 point, 34-33. Ravens were favored. This was a home game for them. Interestingly, I had actually picked Baltimore, Brandon, simply because, as we've talked right here on this program, while San Diego right now sits in a pretty good spot at 8-4, they just kind of had a feeling coming into this game at 7-4. They had a feeling that they'd kind of been sputtering a little bit recently. And so, therefore, I really wasn't quite sure what we would expect. Well, what we got was a really darn close game that actually came down to the very last minute, where Philip Rivers tossed a pass with 38 seconds left, a one-yard pass to Eddie Royal, and that put them up, you know, by the 1 point, 34-33, with help from the extra point from Nick Novak. Rivers was pretty darn good, 34-45, 383 yards, three touchdowns, one interception. Thoughts on this particular game? Flacco looked okay, but I wouldn't say it was necessarily spectacular performance by Flacco. You know, it was just kind of, okay.
Yeah,
I
would agree with you, but you know what? This almost looked like what you would consider to be an early AFC playoff matchup. I mean, both these teams have looked good at times this year and looked really bad at times this year. And I wouldn't say when you have a 34-33 score that either team looked horrible. I mean, maybe neither defense did a great job. I mean, when you're giving up 30-some points. But it's a competitive game, comes down to a point. I agree with you. I think pregame I would have picked the Ravens. I would have thought the Ravens would have won. You know, San Diego Chargers looked great to start out the season, and then they just kind of fell apart and started, you know, they're very streaky. They're either up or they're down. And maybe they're going to just hit an upstroke at the right time here at the end of the year. I mean, now's the time. If you're going to start, you know, coming up, now's the time to do it. I can't explain Philip Rivers. Every time I start to think, yeah, okay, he's going to be, you know, one of the top five NFL quarterbacks and he's looking good, then all of a sudden he starts playing horrible. You know, then as soon as you're ready to say, all right, you know, you suck, go away again, well, then he does this and wins with 30 seconds to go. Has an almost 400-yard passing game with three touchdowns. I mean, you know, it's sometimes certain players in this league are hard to predict. I guess that's why fantasy is so compelling. It's so hard to pick the right players at the right time in fantasy sometimes. And I would imagine if you own Philip Rivers in fantasy, it'd be a nightmare. He's either going to, like, you know, one week he's going to win you the game going away. Next week he's not even going to show up. So, you know, I don't know. I agree with you. Pre-game on this game, I would have said the Ravens win in Baltimore. and Seattle walks away, or San Diego walks away with a win. You know, they needed it. I mean, you know, they clearly have themselves in the best position wild card now. I mean, the Chiefs lost, and three of the four AFC North teams that had four losses all lost. So, you know, San Diego's clearly in the driver's seat now for, well, technically they're still in it for their division. I mean, they have one more game against Denver. They have another game against Denver. Granted, it's in Denver, but I think I'm inclined to give the West to Denver, and maybe San Diego gets a wild card, but, you know, this game might be one they point back to. It's like, yeah, this game's why we're in, if they do make it.
Phillip Rivers certainly is kind of, what's the word I want? Ignominious. When you take a look at it right now, he is number two in the league in completion percentage. Number two at almost 70%. Almost 70% of his passes he's completing. 69.1. He's number nine in the league in yards at 3,218. He's got 25 touchdowns, 10 interceptions, and 102.8 rating overall, average. This guy is, I mean, you're right. It's just you can't figure him out. But leave it here. The guy, what he's done kind of quietly. When he stinks, everybody's making noise about it. But when he's really good, nobody's saying much. So that's kind of where it sits, the way I see it, with Phillip Rivers. I mean, seriously. It's really, really odd.
I'm with you on that. Every time I think I got, you know, you got him handled, and that team, you know, he has weapons around him. I mean, they got Ryan Matthews back at running back. You know, they have Antonio Gates, who's been good. They have three or four receivers. I mean, between Floyd and Royal, and there's another guy on their roster. I mean, they have a core of receivers. They should be better than they are, but they're just, you know, they're up and down sometimes. And I think Keenan Allen, that's the other receiver I was thinking of. So they got the tools. They just need to take that next step, which maybe they will. Maybe this game will be their stepping stone into the playoffs and a better result.
And with regard to the Baltimore Ravens, I just certainly hope that for one more week in a row, they gave a game ball to their kicker. Justin Tucker actually had more points than he's had all season long. I don't know exactly. I'd have to sit here and add it up, but leave it said right here. He had five field goals. Five.
Wow.
So
that's pretty awesome for.
Yeah, I mean, you can see almost half the score for the Ravens came off the foot of Justin Tucker.
Justin Tucker, I think, has been having a pretty good season as a kicker. So I think he's got to be a key point of their season this year so far. A positive one, anyway.
No doubt about that one. He's a, you know, former Pro Bowler, and they were saying the other day, you can bet he'll be making it to the Pro Bowl again. No doubt about that one.
Well, also, there's three or four kickers in the AFC, though, that are pretty good. I mean, my Patriots kickers, I think up until this past week, had missed one field goal all year. And, you know, so there's a lot of good kickers out in the AFC. Adam Vinatieri and the Colts just seems ageless.
Alrighty, let's see. We are at about the halfway point of the program, Brandon. That means I'm just going to take a one-minute break here. Just recognize a couple of our friends, a couple of our sponsors.
Away from your computer? That's no problem. Take the LW83 podcast with you wherever you go with the TuneIn Radio app. Download the free TuneIn app from the App Store or Google Play. Then search for CLW83 to connect to the latest editions of the NAWC, Touch 'Em All, The BS Big Show, and all of your other favorite CLW83 programs. CLW83, online, on demand, and on the go with the TuneIn app for Apple and Android devices. Download it today.
Do you enjoy a completely different perspective from all other run-of-the-mill sports shows?
What in the wide, wide world of sports?
Then the Frat House Sports Show is the show for you. Join Frat House Mike and Sidekick every Saturday afternoon at 3 o'clock Eastern for your weekly dose of the Frat House Sports Show. From NASCAR to hockey and everything in between, the Frat House Sports Show covers it all. Be sure to like their page on Facebook and check out their website, frathousesports.net, right here on HerbFM.com.
Alrighty, Frat House Mike coming back to you here on the Red Zone Blitz, right here on the Frat House Sports Radio Network. And if you want to jump in and give us a holler about anything, please, please, get on the phone, 347-826-9964. Jump in with us. That's why we're doing it this way. So you can jump in and be part of the program. Tell us what's on your mind with regard to the NFL and anything that happened this past weekend. 347-826-9964, or via Skype if you're on the computer, or get into the chat room and leave us a message over there. Brandon joining me as usual as well right here. Another close game here, Brandon, that we had on early on in on Sunday was that Saints game and the Steelers. We've talked about this NFC South ad nauseum here for weeks and weeks and weeks now. And the running joke had been, Mike just seemingly keeps picking the Saints. We're not quite sure why. Well, Mike did it one more time. I guess you have to be right every once in a while. You know, you throw it up on the wall. Throw it up on the wall enough times, and sometimes it's going to stick.
You're leaving out a key point of that that makes it even funnier, is you swore both times you'd never pick them again, ever. So it's funny because you were contradicting your own proclamation about never picking them again.
Would you expect anything less from me, really?
Well, usually when you take a side, you're usually pretty solid to your guns, and not this time, though, not with the Saints.
So I just kept feeling like they were going to – they got to win this thing. I mean, seriously, I don't see – the NFC South is so horrible right now. And having said that, at the same time, I think that the Saints are the best of the worst that's over there. And I just keep thinking, okay, they're going to get – look, you got Drew Brees, for God's sake. You know, and all the weapons he's got over there. With the exception of the fact that we talked about it right here on Sunday, they don't have a ground game. It is so infuriating. Yet, Mark Ingram came to life a little bit this past Sunday, 23 carries, 122 yards. But the Saints ultimately did beat the Steelers on this one, 35-32. And they did it in Pittsburgh, which was actually pretty good as well. I mean, that right there, that alone was quite an achievement for the Saints. And frankly, it was good to see them get this win. Like I said, Drew Brees, we're talking about teams getting a – is Drew Brees getting a pass? I mean, how about that? We're talking about quarterbacks getting a pass. You know, with all of the misery that's been coming down for New Orleans, you haven't heard necessarily anybody putting the blame at Drew Brees' feet. 19-27 he was the other day, 257 yards, 5 touchdowns, 140.0 QB rating. What do you take away from this one, Brandon? Anything there?
Oh, it's an impressive victory, as you pointed out, going into Pittsburgh. It's kind of similar to the game we just talked about with the Ravens and Chargers, you know, the NFC North team at home. They should win, you think, going into the game. And, you know, somebody comes in and kind of gets it a little upset going. But the Saints have kind of been weird all year. Every time you think they're getting it together, you know, then they go out and throw up a really bad game. So we'll see. I tend to agree with you. I think they are the best of the worst in that division. I think they should win out. I think they, well, if not win out, win enough games to win the NFC South. But at the same time, it's like, where's the consistency? Why do they have none? That's the part of this I don't get. I think the biggest complaint with the Saints, at least in my opinion, has been the defense. Their defense has been horrible. And you know, Rob Ryan, the other Ryan, you know, is supposed to be this defensive guru, and the defense is ranked last. It's one of the worst defenses in football. So, you know, I don't quite get it. You know, the whole with the Saints. The Saints should be a better team than they are, but I think they're gonna actually benefit, I think, from being in a weak division, to the point where they're gonna get into the playoffs. If they can get hot in these next couple of weeks and get a little momentum going, maybe they could make a little noise. They're gonna run out of steam as soon as they hit Philadelphia, Seattle, Green Bay. You know, those team, that caliber team is gonna just take this team apart, because this team can't stop anybody. And you know, that's just the long and short of it. But you know, this particular win, you know, not only is it a little surprising because they did it in Pittsburgh, you know, both teams scored 30 points. I mean, mm-hmm. That's not a typical MO of a Steelers game. I mean, the Steelers, you know, usually play defense, and they're not putting up, you know, Ben Roethlisberger had 435 yards passing. That's just not a typical Steelers game. So, you know, it's a little different on both sides of the ball on this game.
Well, and this was a New Orleans team that just a couple of years ago when they were contending,
mm-hmm.
I guess this would have been, you know, right before the whole Bounty Gate thing. This was a New Orleans defense that was considered to be one of the best defenses in the entire league. That wasn't all that long ago.
Now, but they have hit some age. Some of the key members of that defense, as a matter of fact, I believe two of the big players in the Bounty Gate that were, you know, suspended aren't even on the team anymore. As a matter of fact, I think they're done. I think both of them have kind of hit the age wall and they're not even playing anymore. And that's just kind of I think that's what's happened to this defense. I think it kind of got old in a hurry.
Yep. Now, you mentioned Rob Ryan. Rob Ryan, apparently, and I don't know whether you got any news on this from PFT or not, because I know you follow PFT better than I do. Apparently, there was a little bit of witnessed on-field sparks between the head coach and Ryan, huh?
Yeah, I read a little bit about that too. But yeah, you've seen that from time to time, where a head coach will, you know, lash out at one of his coordinators or a position coach. I don't know if there's turmoil there. I mean, I don't know if this team's good enough to even have that kind of turmoil. I mean, usually you see that kind of turmoil on a team like the 49ers, who are, you know, they've been in the top, at the top of the, you know, the conference really for 3 years, you know, and they don't even have internal coaching turmoil. It's more organizational. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know if it's a factor or not. I think I don't get the sense that Sean Payton's not in charge, or that, you know, Rob Ryan's like some kind of renegade coach. I think they're kind of on the same page. I mean, I think it was just frustration, probably.
Right.
Don't get me wrong. I would imagine Rob Ryan himself is frustrated. I don't think he wants to be the defensive coordinator of such a horrible defensive unit. But what's he going to do? I mean, you got to work with the pieces you have, and their pieces may not be the best right now. So, you know, we'll see. We'll have to
see.
Well,
as you pointed out, Ben Roethlisberger, 32 of 58, 435 yards, two touchdowns, two INTs, 76.4 QB rating. That is not the kind of defense that I think anybody expected from New Orleans. Again, most, you know, particularly just remembering not that long ago that these one of the better defensive cores in the league. Needless to say, though, New Orleans, should they make the playoffs by virtue of just winning that division, don't expect to see that kind of a team with those kinds of numbers lasting into the second round. That's for sure. That's
no,
not
I would
happen.
Agree with you there. I would agree with you there. Just, you know, it's somebody has to win the NFC South, and I think finally New Orleans is going to be the team to step up and do that.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as Pittsburgh, you know, they're in a mess in their division. That division, there's four teams in that division that can win that division. And unfortunately, Cincinnati, one of the – what we have commented on, looks like the worst, is in control, you know, because they have a tie and, you know, one less loss than the other three. So it's going to be an interesting race to watch that division unfold. Pittsburgh needs to – not drop games like this at home is what they need to do. I mean, I hate to sound, you know, like painfully obvious. This isn't a game they should have dropped, though. This is a game they should have won.
Well, looking at that division, and since you brought it up, let's jump over real quick. I'm gonna fly with this one on the seat of my pants. We'll jump over to Cincinnati for a moment. Looking at that AFC North division, you got four teams in there, all with winning records. One of them is going to win the division and get into the playoffs. If the records stay as they are, Brandon, we may not see a wild card out of this division.
Well,
you could get I think you're probably definitely going to get one wild card out of the West. You could get one of the other wild cards out of the East, in which case then you could have three winning teams all in the AFC North, none of which you make the playoffs at all. And the way things are going right now, Cincinnati, as you just pointed out, who we have said right here, I mean, let's get this one straight. We sat and tuned into a little bit, or from maybe around halftime on, a little bit of that Bengals-Buccaneers game, where the Bengals just barely won that game on the road, mind you, but barely won that game by 1 point, 14-13. And I sat here and watched the end of that, and I just flat out said, this Cincinnati Bengals team stinks, flat out. That's it. There's no other way to describe it. They stink. I don't care if they're 8-3-1. They stink.
Well, they're in control, that's for sure, and there's only four games left. You know, they essentially have a, you know, it's 1.5, but essentially a two-game lead because they have a buffer in that loss column. So, you know, that's going to play out. I think you could almost put a little X next to Cincinnati as saying they're making the playoffs, whether they're a wild card team or a division winner, because solely because of that tie, they have 8 wins already with 4 games to go. They win one more game. It's almost a lock that they make the playoffs. So, you know, as bad as they are, they've certainly positioned themselves in a good enough place. That's for sure. I don't know. I would imagine there's still some games to be played amongst each other, so maybe somebody can, you know, one of these teams can, like, position itself for the, you know, the division by, you know, winning head-to-head games, but it's a shame, you're right. It looks like a solid division, and I'll be honest with you, the 7-5 Ravens, Steelers, and Browns, I think they all have better playoff potential than the 2 7-5 teams in the East. I think Miami and Buffalo are, yeah, they have 7-5 records, but I don't see them as good as any of the three, you know, 7-5 teams in the North. I think the three teams in the North look like better teams to me, at least visually.
We've watched a little bit of all of those teams there in the AFC North. We've watched our share of the Cincinnati Bengals, the Baltimore Ravens. We've watched a lot of the Baltimore Ravens, unfortunately, at times. We've watched a lot of the Pittsburgh Steelers and the Cleveland Browns. And if you go with the eye test on what we've seen to this point so far in the season, by virtue of the games and dominance, I'm going to be honest with you, I'd have to give the nod to the Pittsburgh Steelers, I think, as the best team in that division. When you take a look at some of the things that Roethlisberger pulled off, particularly those two 50-plus point scoring games in a row, and what was it, 12 touchdowns in 2 games? I mean, that was dominant. You know, we haven't seen that. Cincinnati in particular, you have not seen anything like that from all season long. This guy can't score touchdowns to save his life, for God's sake,
no.
Dalton.
I agree with you.
You know, a couple of the articles, in fact, one of the articles I think I sent over to you with the outline was a columnist from up there in Cincinnati saying, you know, if Andy Dalton doesn't get his act together, this team is going nowhere with regard to the playoffs. So it's obvious that a lot of emphasis is being placed on Dalton as well. In fact, I think it should be, because I've been saying it early on in the season. This guy, I think, is just so highly overrated, it's not even funny. What's he up to at this point? 13 touchdowns and 13 interceptions, Brandon. And this from an 8-3-1 team that's leading their division. Seriously. That is a disgrace. This team stinks. It really does.
I agree with you. I don't know if I agree with you on Pittsburgh being the best. I'd have to give it to Baltimore. I think Baltimore is a better team. They have better running backs, I think, tandem maybe, than Pittsburgh. I mean, Le'Veon Bell's having an awesome season. But, you know, Forsett for the Ravens has looked really good. And I think the Ravens
for a rookie, my goodness.
Yeah, I think the Ravens to me look to be a little better, but you know, we're both in the same boat. Cincinnati's way ahead of them, and I don't know how that's going to play. I mean, Cincinnati, you know, they shouldn't be where they are, and they are. You know, what happens in the playoffs? They get a home, they'll get a home game no matter what. They're gonna, you know, if they win the division, they'll get a home game no matter what.
That's exactly right.
I don't know. Did they win one? Maybe. I don't know. I mean, looking at their remaining schedule, they got to play Pittsburgh and Cincinnati. Then they got to go to Cleveland. Then Denver comes to Cincinnati, and then they finish at Pittsburgh. So they got basically Cincinnati has to play Pittsburgh twice. So if any team in the AFC North is going to beat them by head-to-head play,
Pittsburgh.
So Pittsburgh has the opportunity by virtue of the fact they play them twice. And Cincinnati has to play Denver, which I think you can count that as a loss. If Denver loses to Cincinnati, that would be astonishing. But, you know, that's actually a Monday night game on ESPN, too. So we'll be watching that one, I'm sure, the Broncos and Cincinnati. But, you know, Pittsburgh, I guess, clearly has the best opportunity to dethrone Cincinnati. But the nice thing, or I guess another piece to watch, is Baltimore. You know, they have, if they can win out along with Pittsburgh winning, you know, they might have just a better shot because technically they have them listed above Pittsburgh in tiebreakers right now. So, you know, I'm not quite sure how they all would play out, but if they match Pittsburgh and Pittsburgh does the dirty work to Cincinnati, maybe, you know, Baltimore or Pittsburgh could win the North. So we'll have to see. That'll be interesting. That's the way this is the best time of year. This, you know, these last 4 weeks of the regular season and the first 2 weeks of the NFL or 3 weeks of the NFL, you know, playoffs are the best parts of the year. I mean, you got the regular season wrapping up and then the 3 weeks leading up to the Super Bowl. That's the best time of football. So we're coming right into it right now.
And real quick, just staying on that AFC North for a moment, the underdog in you has got to almost, in some respects, look down and feel a little bit bad, albeit I'm not counting them out yet, the Cleveland Browns, who have respectively put up a 7-5 mark themselves, going through their share of QB issues and what have you, all the pressure that's been placed on brand new coach up there, Mike Pettine, you know, get Manziel in, you know, and all the other nonsense. And, you know, it's, you know, if things go as they are, they're all going to be on the outside looking in after posting up what's been a really, really impressive season, I think, for the Browns. And a really good, a good omen for them for the future.
I would agree with your sentiment unless they name Manziel the starting quarterback. They name him the quarterback, they deserve whatever they get. Brian Hoyer has not done anything to deserve being benched short of his last 15 games as a starter for the Browns. He's put up a 10-5 record. That's playoffs for anybody else, for the most part, a 10-5. I mean, you still have one more game in a season. So if the Browns make Manziel their starter, which everybody's more or less waiting for to be announced, they have nobody to blame but themselves for not making a playoffs. They should stick with Hoyer, and they should ride this out. That's my opinion. I don't like switching to Manziel just because he's a first round pick. This team's in the playoffs. They've played hard to get where they are. They have some good talented players around him. I think they should just ride this out. They could make the playoffs potentially if they stick to what they've been doing. Switching to Manziel, as far as I'm concerned, you're giving up on the season. That's a give up. That's a cop out. That's a, you know, that's the Browns management saying, okay, we're even though we're in it, we're conceding now. We're going to let our rookie play. That's not what you do. You got a starting quarterback who's been leading this team all year. Finish it. That's just my opinion.
Following that loss last weekend to Buffalo, where Cleveland lost 26-10, and six of those points, I guess, were actually put up by Johnny Manziel himself for his very first touchdown of his pro career. Essentially, what you were looking at is you're looking at Brian Hoyer going in and going 26-0 against, you know, against Buffalo. The talk immediately following that had been that there was some rumor that potentially Cleveland may move to starting Manziel, perhaps as early as this coming week. What's the word that you're getting on that? Is that still a rumor? Or as I haven't read anything, so it seems to me it's kind of quieted down.
Last I heard, Wednesday a decision was coming and that all signs are pointing to Manziel being the starter.
Really?
You have LeBron James out there actively lobbying for it. Oh, I mean, who cares, LeBron, just because
you
happen to be in the same marketing company as Manziel. That's all that's about. That has nothing to do with wanting to see Manziel win for Cleveland. That's garbage. But unfortunately, everything I read, it's leaning towards Manziel. And I think it's a mistake.
I think that if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
No, I'm with you.
The exception of one game, and we're only talking about the game against Buffalo.
Yeah. Everybody has a bad
that
game.
One game. Yeah, exactly.
And Buffalo's a 7-5 team. You're talking about another 7-5 team in Buffalo who just overcame all kind of adversity with all the snow. They had a play game in Detroit as a home team.
Well, and they've been on the quarterback carousel too.
Well, not really. They only switched once. They went from Manuel to Orton, and that's it.
Yeah, but I'm saying they intended the year with Manuel.
Oh, yeah.
That's what their intention was.
Yeah. Well, they made one change, but they made that early when they were suffering. I mean, they were horrible then. You got to kind of give it to what Orton's done. Orton's done a pretty good job, you know, of rallying that team.
Oh, agreed.
I don't think it's much different from what Hoyer's done with Cleveland. So that's why I really don't get why you would even consider Manziel at this point. You're still in it, you know, just because you're sitting last in the rankings because of tiebreakers at the moment. That could change in a heartbeat. I don't understand why they don't just, you know, ride Hoyer, you know, ride that out and see if you can make a playoff run with it.
Yeah, I was just about to say, I mean, if there are two teams that really are on a straight line parallel that you could really compare beautifully, it is, in fact, the Buffalo Bills and the Cleveland Browns.
Mm-hmm.
Very similar.
I agree with you. Yeah. Yeah, and you know what? On any given Sunday, that could have been reversed, where you know, Hoyer's leading the Browns to 26-0 over the Bills, and the Bills are pulling Orton and putting EJ Manuel in to mop up. That's all Manziel was in for, was mop-up duty. I'm not letting that touchdown he ran in matter. It doesn't matter. It was a meaningless touchdown. It was done in fourth quarter mop-up duty, so of a game you know you're not going to win. I don't give that any credence whatsoever. You know, I mean, Johnny Football is, I think what you said way, way, way back at the beginning of the season, it's going to prove out that he's not going to be an NFL quarterback, and nobody likes his attitude. I don't think the Cleveland Browns like his attitude, but they're
mm-hmm.
stuck with him, so now they got to live with it, I guess, if that's the way they're going to go.
I think you're answering Uncle Mark's question in the chat room. Does Johnny Football mark the beginning or the end of the Browns for 2014?
Oh,
I think you're saying the
end. Clearly. Mm-hmm. If they do that, you know what? As far as I'm concerned, they deserve to be last in that division. I was impressed with what the Browns have done all year. You know, I'd like to see them win as long as they're going to leave Hoyer as a quarterback. I don't want to see Manziel. I don't think this is not the time to do this. Not with 4 weeks to go in a season where your starting quarterback has led you to a 7-5 record and clearly in the hunt for a playoff spot. You could still win your division and you're going to put your rookie quarterback in now? No, I agree with what Uncle Mark just said in the chat room. Have him go eat a Snickers. Stay on the sideline. Go teach your yoga class while you're eating your Snickers.
Oh,
there,
I kind of I read Uncle Mark's comment being directed at you. I thought maybe he meant you should eat the Snickers.
Oh, I should eat the Snickers.
Because you were getting so fired up about Johnny Manziel there. I thought perhaps maybe that's what it meant.
You know what I'm fired up about? I'll be honest with you. I think it's a stupid mistake. Why, you know, you're going to bow to this pressure when your team is clearly in contention to put this guy in. It's a mistake. You don't give up on a how many times can the Cleveland Browns in the last, I don't know, since they've come back as the new Browns, been at 7-5 and in a playoff hunt, you know, after week 13? Probably one, maybe? And you're going to bail on it and put your rookie quarterback in now? That's clearly a stupid decision. I can't get behind it. I'm sorry.
As much as, look, the bottom line is this. We here at Frat House Sports are not big fans of Johnny Manziel, if anybody's catching the drift here.
But
at some point or another, Brandon, the guy was a number – he was the first-round draft pick.
Well, that's
the
a decision
Cleveland
you
Browns
make in the offseason.
The Cleveland Browns are going to have to put him in, yes?
Well, yes. Well, that's a decision you make in the offseason. They structured
a
contract.
Okay.
Hoyer is a free agent at the end of the season. You know, if you're not going to go with Hoyer, you're going to make Manziel your starter. You start the season with him next year and see where it goes. I think you let Hoyer do what he was paid to do this year and be the starting quarterback and at least give the team a chance to make the playoffs. If let's say 2 weeks to go, they're out of it. Say they lose the next two games, they're sitting at 7-7. All right, you want to put Hoyer in, or Manziel in then? I'm okay with it. Not now. Not when you're still clearly in it. No, that's my biggest reaction. You know, because they already have plans for next season. I mean, they only signed Hoyer to this season as a one-year deal. Hoyer is going to be somewhere else next year. And we'll get plenty of Johnny football next year. Don't worry about that.
Yep. All right. Well, you know, I'm surprised. I mean, because, you know, I slammed the Cincinnati Bengals pretty good there, saying outright they stink. And I'll say it again, they stink. And you just got done doing a little back and forth there on Johnny football. I'm surprised the switchboard isn't lit up.
Well, I'm more mad at their hierarchy at Cleveland for even allowing this to fester. They should have just said Monday, Hoyer's starting next week, and that's it. Well, now we have to wait for a Wednesday announcement. This should be no decision here. That's what annoys me.
It certainly sounds like they're leading up to, the announcement that it's going to go the other way. That it's.
Oh yeah.
I mean, otherwise you don't need to delay it. You know what I mean?
Exactly. Exactly.
So, but with the few minutes that we've got left, and we're in a little bit of overtime here, folks. So. If anybody wants to jump in, 347-826-9964. We're going to take a look at one more game here. 347-826-9964 as we go a little bit of overtime for you. Well, because it was just that sort of week, what can I tell you? Hey, let's go over and take a look at a game that, meant a lot to a lot of people here at the Frat House, and it probably meant a lot to a lot of people out there, and that was the New England Patriots and the Green Bay Packers. And, well, the Packers at home are just unbeatable. And they were even against the Patriots. 26-21, the Patriots went down. Brandon, is there any better team right now, maybe, in the NFL than the Green Bay Packers? Look, I was sitting there, and you know this as well. You know, I was sitting there. I was one of the, you know, yourself, myself. We were rooting for New England. We had a couple others here in the frat house that were rooting for Green Bay, but it was frustrating. This was a frustrating game to watch from the standpoint of trying to sit there rooting for New England. Of course, I wanted Green Bay to go down because, of course, I'm an Eagles fan, and I wanted that just, you know, that would have helped my team out a little bit. But aside from that, I also had a little bit of fantasy interest in New England. But,
You did all right in fantasy for New England. You got your points.
That's what I said. I said I've got some interest in New England. I've got some fantasy interest. But seriously, Green Bay certainly appears at this particular time maybe the best team in the NFL.
I think right now they're playing the best. I think you just saw the best two teams in the NFL. I mean, one thing you got to remember is this game happened in Green Bay, and Green Bay plays really well in Green Bay. I mean, it wasn't just 2 weeks ago the Eagles went to Green Bay and got throttled. So, you know, I'm not going to – as a Patriots fan, I'm not going to hang my head. I think if this game would have been in New England and not in Green Bay, it could have been just the reverse outcome, a very tight game that came down to the, you know, very end. I mean, the Patriots had a third down where if the defense would have held Rodgers, they'd have got the ball back, and Brady would have had plenty of time to – you know, it was before the two-minute – warning, they would have had plenty of time to at least mount an attempt to score a final touchdown. You know, it just on that third down, they just couldn't get the stop they needed. And, you know, that game was tightly contested the whole way through. So, you know, I'm not knocking either team. I think both teams are playing well. And, you know, you learn from it and move on. As a matter of fact, as a Patriots fan, it's almost – if this is a team you could see in the Super Bowl, from, you know, Bill Belichick and Brady to lose to this team, that gives them all the fire they need to go to play this team again. So if that's the way it unfolds, that, you know, we looked at a potential Super Bowl matchup from a Patriots fan's view, I'm happy. You know, we played solid. They won, but it was a solid game. There was no reason for anybody.
LeGarrette Blount's looking more and more like a really good pickup for your Patriots.
That offense somehow.
Yeah, 10 carries, 58 yards. This was something that really was lacking, and we've talked about this, but it seems like for season after season after season, Brandon, is the lack of a ground game for the Patriots. I don't get it. They just seem to, like, go through running backs like no other team that I can remember. But Blount seems to have sparked them a little bit.
If you remember the playoffs last year, in the playoffs, LeGarrette Blount had a phenomenal playoff,
which
led to him getting the little bit of a contract he got in Pittsburgh. I'm surprised, I guess, because he has a bit of a reputation and doesn't play well with others, but he seems to fit in New England. I don't know why. He likes it there. He likes the coach. He seems to not be a problem in New England. They brought him back, you know, open arms 3 days after he was cut. You know, from walking out on Pittsburgh, I was a little shocked that he was welcomed back so willingly and, you know, no questions asked kind of thing. But you know what? 10 carries, 58 yards, leads the team in rushing. Joseph Gray had one game, gets 200 yards, and then he gets to see the bench for the whole next game and then gets a whole one carry in the second game after that. So clearly, you know, Blount, Belichick sees something in Blount, or else he wouldn't
but
be putting it in.
That's not typical.
There.
That's not typical of Belichick to be that forgiving that quickly. Is
no,
it?
That's no, not at all. It's totally. I don't get the LeGarrette Blount thing. From a fan, I'm happy. Hey, great! You're going to come. You're going to go out there and get 10 carries at, you know, 5.8 yards a carry all day long. I'm happy. You know, as long as you're not a problem, which clearly he doesn't seem to be when he's in New England. You know, whatever. It's okay. They have other guys on that team that could do a good job too. So I don't understand it. That's a tough thing to call with Belichick, but you know.
Over on the other side, Green Bay seems to have gotten their ground game going as well. After we've talked about them, it seems like all season long not having a ground game. Eddie Lacy again, 21 carries, 98 yards against your Patriots defense. Lacy has now quietly worked his way up to 10th on the running list. So Lacy, after starting out the season rather slowly, has suddenly broken out. I'd say the same thing, too, of your Rob Gronkowski. My God, he was on fire the other day. 7 receptions, 98 yards. Suddenly, Gronkowski's the big guy over there again.
Well, Gronkowski started his year a little slow. You got to remember, he came back from an ACL injury.
Yep.
So the first 3 weeks, he wasn't even in there for half the offensive snaps. He was only seeing, you know, 20 snaps a game versus, you know, 50 or whatever offensive, you know, snaps they have. So he was building up, and he's been a force now for the last 3-4 weeks.
Yep.
He's in, you know, he's in the talks for the MVP. I saw a story today that of the top 5 guys, Tom Brady and Rob Gronkowski are in consideration for MVP talk, along with Aaron Rodgers, J.J. Watt, and there was a fourth. Who was the fifth guy? There's 5 guys. I mean, there's names left off the list, like Peyton Manning wasn't even being talked about. Le'Veon Bell is having a great year for Pittsburgh. Oh, yeah, DeMarco Murray was the fifth candidate.
Oh, there you go.
He's having an incredible season, too. So it's just like, you know, all of a sudden now, you know, the Patriots are, you know, this was a loss, but they're fine. We got all of our, you know, key guys running. You know, the receiving core looks remarkably better when you got a healthy Gronkowski and now Brandon LaFell, who you've known to come to love as one of your fantasy stalwarts there. You know, they look like a totally different team on offense. Granted, Green Bay slowed them down a little bit. They have a solid defense. Green Bay's defense is starting to peak at a good time. So you had 2 good teams play here. This was a good game. It was a fun game to watch, even though my team lost. It was still a well-played game on both sides of the ball. You know, no turnovers, which you kind of expect. You know, and this is what you got.
Yep. It really was. I mean, it was a good game. It was a well-executed game for the most part on both sides of the ball. Mm-hmm. With, as you pointed out, very, very few, if any, real mistakes. Even the penalties were kept to a minimum. I mean, my God, there were only four for New England and four for Green Bay. Didn't even total 50 yards between the eight penalties. So,
yeah.
Very, very good executed, well-executed game between these two teams. And you got the kind of result I think one would expect from two premier teams in the NFL.
Yep. Game that came down to the wire in the fourth quarter. Yeah, you know, that's always fun. It's not as fun when you're, you know, a fan of one of them and one of them, you know, your team loses, but it was still, you still got to look at the game and say, yeah, okay, that was a good game. I'm not hanging my head on this loss, so. We'll see.
Oh,
we may see this team again. You never know.
Well, yes, very, very good. Listen, I know we talk about that over here in the Eagles camp. We talk about the fact that we probably will be seeing Green Bay.
Oh, that's a very good likelihood of that. Unfortunately for the Eagles, if the game's in Green Bay, I don't like the
Odds either.
The odds either. I think Seattle may have something to say about, you know, all that too before we get to the conference championship game. So we'll see.
We got four weeks remaining.
I think it all depends how the seeding falls. I think that one and the two, you know, in the NFC especially. I think the one and the two in the AFC is kind of a foregone conclusion going to be New England and Denver. But I think the NFC, it's much more up for grabs. I mean, you still have Arizona in the argument, even though they've kind of been sputtering, because they have, you know, the same record as the Eagles and Packers. And Seattle's only one game behind it. So it's going to be, I think the seeding in the NFC is going to be much more interesting.
The NFC, playoff. I would agree with you, is going to be much more interesting. You know, when you consider, as you just pointed out, that we've got three teams right now with 9-3 records. Over in the AFC, it's only two. So that right there makes it a little more interesting. The question continues to be whether Arizona has seen their best days this season.
That's unfortunate.
That's the question.
That's unfortunate, too, because I've liked what Arizona's done all year. It's a shame they've had the injuries they've had. Yeah, I think the one to Carson Palmer is going to prove to be the nail in their coffin, unfortunately.
Exactly.
It's a shame because they were looking so good. Maybe Drew Stanton and Arians can figure out a way to, you know, win a few games and still get a decent seed in the playoffs. But, you know, with the way the NFC West is, with Seattle and Arizona both being in it, one of them is going to have to be the division winner and one's going to have to be a wild card. There's no other way, you know. And unfortunately, Seattle's just looking unstoppable right now, so.
Yeah. Yep. Well, we'll see how that's going to go because, again, as I pointed out.
We got the best 4 weeks of football coming up.
What you want to be doing, too, is you want to be tuning in tomorrow night right here on the Frat House Sports Radio Network, 7 p.m., inside the War Nest. Jim Williams and myself, and we're going to be talking Dallas Eagles as it was played last Thursday on Thanksgiving Day. But then, more importantly, we're already looking ahead, as well we should, important matchup this coming Sunday between the Seattle Seahawks and the Philadelphia Eagles. Seattle coming to Lincoln Financial Field. So this is going to be one important program, and it's going to be one important weekend for both teams, for both Seattle and the Philadelphia Eagles. No, make no mistake about that. And we will be joined by a special guest from over at let me get this right. I want to make sure I got my information correctly. We will be joined by Rob Rang from over at SeahawkFootball.com, and he will be coming in with us in around the 7:30 mark to talk up the Seattle Seahawks. But that's a program absolutely you're going to want to be tuning into again tomorrow night, 7 p.m., inside the War Nest, all right, for your Eagles NFC East coverage. Thursday night we'll be coming back to you right here with our regular flagship program, the Frat House Sports Show. Oh, how about number 169? Yeah, and we've already been talking about, we sat down this evening, we had a little editorial meeting. We already have a couple of the hot topics on the list, and, you're going to want to tune in to find out what those are. 7 p.m. Eastern Time right here, Frat House Sports Radio Network for the Frat House Sports Show on Thursday night. You got a little bit of bonus coverage from us here this evening, as things were just too good to leave off the agenda, so we kind of ran through almost everything. A couple of topics there I might reserve yet for Thursday night's program. Brandon, thanks again for being with me as usual. Thank you all out there for tuning in to us here on the Red Zone Blitz. Make sure that you're following us here on the Blog Talk Radio Network. Hit that follow button on the Frat House Sports page. And make sure you get over and like us over on Facebook as well. Frat House Sports, leave spaces between it. You'll find us. It's that little purple icon. All right, in the meantime, take care and make sure that you're tuning in with us again tomorrow night, 7 p.m. for Inside the War Nest. Catch you then.